Hi, my name is Mark Granroth Wilding, and I'm going to be talking to Michael Edwards today from the music department here in Edinburgh. Michael uses algorithmic techniques to compose music, and we're going to be talking today about algorithmic composition and computational thinking in music. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
To get started, maybe I could just ask you, what is algorithmic composition, and why should a composer today be interested in this approach to music making?
A lot of people get slightly disturbed when they even hear the term algorithmic composition, because they immediately assume it involves some kind of high-level mathematics or something mm-hmm. extremely complex. And it can indeed use techniques that become complex, but in and of itself, algorithmic composition simply means the generation of music by step-by-step procedures that can actually be codified and eventually implemented in software. I would say the reason that people should be interested in algorithmic composition techniques making their own music is that they simply would be continuing a tradition of using formal approaches to generating musical material. But more than that, now that we have software available to help us with the generation of material in an algorithmic way, the opportunity exists to vastly enrich your musical palette by exploring some of the material that algorithmic composition techniques can give you for your musical work.
Right, okay. So from what you say about the history of algorithmic composition, it suggests that perhaps it's not something that's specific to the digital era, but something that goes back further.
Well, I think, to be fair, you would have to say that algorithmic composition started with Leger and Hiller in the 1950s, and it is something that is mainly linked to the digital era. I don't want to conflate algorithmic techniques with formal planning in music. I just want to make the connection there. I don't want to say they're exactly the same thing, that people have always been doing what we term algorithmic composition, rather that a lot of the techniques that composers were using, developing on paper with a pencil perhaps, can actually be very simply encoded in software systems and used in a more algorithmic manner, as we would term it these days.
And this would give you some new kinds of music that wouldn't have been possible before on paper.
I think so. I think so very much, because what algorithmic techniques allow you to do is to not necessarily commit yourself to a certain route. If you think about, say, a technique like serialism, you might decide on, say, the ordering of 12 notes when you start a composition, and then you might start writing the composition using the various techniques associated with serialism to create the composition, and you might spend several months writing this composition, and you get to the end of it and you've explored various aspects of the series in your piece, and you might have the idea, you know, if I just change that one interval, it could have had quite a different sound, and that might have been nice. You're not going to spend the 3 months that it took you to write the piece again to reproduce it with this slightly new structure. With algorithmic approaches that involve software, you can do exactly that. So it's this iterative process of expressing an idea in software, auditioning the results of running the software, modifying the software slightly, or the parameters contained in the software, re-listening. This kind of loop is very important and the most fruitful part of the whole project, I think.
Right. I see. So this seems to lead to a question that perhaps might be something that that would bug people who aren't familiar with these sorts of techniques, which is, how much are these techniques directly associated with the kind of structures that a listener hears in the music, and how much do they work on just a level that the composer is aware of?
Well, that's an issue that I think transcends algorithmic composition, and that you can address, and many people do address, when they talk about contemporary classical composition, for want of a better word.
In the context of serialism, I
particularly
suppose.
Particularly in the context of serialism and atonal music of the last 100 years or so. First of all, it's important to point out that composers have had strategies to develop material since they've been putting notes on paper, and that the techniques that they were using were perhaps completely opaque. The audiences might have had no idea whatsoever what was going on. For instance, using certain proportions in structuring the major sections of a piece. People might not realize when they're listening to a Dufay motet that it was structured according to the proportions of, say, Florence Cathedral. It's not so important, perhaps, even to know that. I think, on the other hand, that the human mind is extremely agile and it becomes bored very, very quickly. So searching for different levels of complexity in the structures you generate can actually allow you to tease a listener, I suppose, between unpredictability and predictability in the musical surface that they're listening to. That is one of the prime sort of questions I'm asking myself all the time when I'm composing music. How predictable is this? How unpredictable is it? How do I find that border where my ideal listener will be interested enough, captivated enough by the surface to be following the music and yet questioning in which direction it will go so that they're not bored, so that it's not too predictable? And that's very often happening on the surface level of the music, say in the patterns of the notes. These things are very often generated, in my case, and in lots of composers' cases, by the formal planning techniques they use. True, certain techniques are sort of under the hood, and the listener isn't aware of them, but some of them are actually very, very audible.
One obvious way, perhaps, of thinking of that would be that the formal techniques are giving you the predictable side of things, and the composer is injecting the unpredictability into it. Is that fair?
That's a possibility. That's a possibility. But I would myself prefer to work at algorithms that straddle that borderland between predictability and unpredictability. However, and this is where I sort of side more, I suppose, with composers like Yannis Xenakis and Gottfried Michael Koenig, as opposed to, say, LeJaron Hiller. LeJaron Hiller said that if you are somehow dissatisfied with the music that comes out of your algorithm, you should change the algorithm so that it gives you the desired results. I respect that point of view, and I follow it to a certain extent. But I just don't think, in my case at least, and actually in no case that I know of, I'd be very happy to hear if you know of any cases, but I don't know of any case where we've modelled the compositional process so well that we can actually produce all of the little idiosyncrasies that a composer would interject into his or her piece. I still do reserve the right as a composer to take my output and modify it as I see fit. If I want to change a note, I change a note. Now, these days it might only be about 2 to 5% of what my algorithms give me, but I still think that that gives it that extra, not necessarily unpredictability, but integrity, say, to my vision for that music.
Yeah. So we've talked at a general level about algorithmic techniques for composition. What are the main techniques that have been used for algorithmic composition to date, and what techniques do you use?
The first techniques were Markov techniques. These have been very popular for music, simply because they can encapsulate some of the rules that we have in music anyway. So, for instance, you know, when you're learning to write good melodies as a music student, you might learn that a large ascending leap should generally be followed by a fall or a falling leap. And Markov models can encapsulate these things very well. Lindenmeyer techniques have also been used by several composers and are useful because of the self-similarity that the structures represent. So you can have repeating motifs generated by such techniques.
So you mentioned Lindenmayer systems there, which I think is something that you've used in your algorithmic composition.
Yes.
Could you give us a bit more of a description of how these work and what they do?
L systems are not so dissimilar to Markov techniques, but in their most basic form, they don't involve any randomness. And this is why I'm particularly attracted to them. So it's a rewriting system. For instance, just have very simple rules where one state will always result in two other states. And then you feed the system a seed, say two. Then you simply take that rule two and or seed two and replace it with what you defined it should replace. And then you take the results of that and you replace each of those elements by what they should replace. And so you get an increasing number of results as you proceed through the rewriting loop. And then those numbers, they could be notes, or they could be harmonies, or they could be motifs. For instance, I use them very simply in connecting harmonies. I still think sometimes very traditionally in terms of harmony. Okay, they might not be tonal chords as we know them, but I might develop a series of chords for a piece. There might be 7 chords or 12 chords that I'll use in a piece of music. And these will be developed perhaps at the keyboard, certainly by ear. I will be using my ear to judge whether I like this chord and whether it will make its way into the piece or not. But I might not be thinking exactly about the music I'll make with those chords while I'm developing the chord sequence. And in fact, I'm not necessarily even thinking of a sequence. This is where L systems come into play. I might take each individual chord and say, well, what can I follow this chord with? I've got these 12 chords. Okay, here's chord 2. What comes after chord 2? And I might try different chords from my repertoire of 12, and some will work and some won't. So I'll make a list of those that work, and these will come into the L system then.
So essentially you're defining some sort of coherence on a small scale, which will then generate something supposedly coherent on a larger scale.
Exactly. Yeah.
So people often seem to feel uneasy about computational composition because they might feel that the creative and expressive input of the composer is being lost from the music. Professor Jay Clinton in 1865 produced his so-called quadrille melodist, which, if I understand correctly, was a system of cards for generating melodies randomly, essentially. Now, in the case of purely stochastic systems along those lines, you can understand people's misgivings about the loss of composer's input from this. But from what you've said, it sounds like that's not a criticism that people could level at you in your techniques. Is this something you get a lot, and how would you respond to that in respect to of your work?
I think there is that suspicion there on the part of the general public that somehow we're passing the buck and letting the computer compose for us. And I would say that nothing is further from the truth. It really does take a good composer to design algorithms that will produce good music. And there's just no getting away from that, I don't think. I, for instance, do all of the programming to encapsulate my compositional technique. I might use the software encapsulation of those techniques to investigate music to such a degree that I arrive at something new, but it's still me, the composer, who's deciding then to use that material. So it's not just a case of taking away some of the laborious processes. It is that, but it's also about having access to enormous amounts of material so that you can then use your selective faculties to get the best out of what's available from your generative techniques. And ultimately, the music has to work on a human level. It has to be understood and appreciated by human beings. Otherwise, it will simply disappear. It might be in some obscure academic paper somewhere by myself, but if my music doesn't succeed by itself as music, then it will just be consigned to the annals of history, and absolutely, we'll be looking somewhere else.
Okay, so maybe just to conclude, I should pull out a quote that you've quoted before from Xenakis, which seems to seems perhaps to hint at some of what you've been saying in rather flowery language. He says, with the aid of electronic computers, the composer becomes a sort of pilot. He presses buttons, introduces coordinates, and supervises the controls of a cosmic vessel sailing in the space of sound, and across sonic constellations and galaxies that he could formerly glimpse only in a distant dream. Michael Edwards, it's been great to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.